Facebook, Twitter, Pinterest, email, Google+. Simple ways that you can share Issues Etc. programs with your friends, relatives, and fellow parishioners. Just go to Listen on Demand Archives at issuesetc.org and look for the share feature images posted beneath each audio segment. You're only one click away from telling someone about Issues Etc. The Listen on Demand page at issuesetc.org and look for Share This.
I always cherished the Methodist Church because it gave us the great gift of personal salvation, but the great obligation of social gospel.
That's Hillary Clinton speaking about her faith. When she does this, it's very often, especially among her political opponents, received as completely insincere and totally born of politics. She's just pretending to be a believer. Is that true? She says she is a Christian believer, holds to the basic tenets of Christianity, the Trinity, the atoning death of Jesus Christ, and the resurrection of Jesus Christ. That makes anyone else in most people's book a Christian. But let's just look at her life and see whether or not she has the track record of someone who's devoted to the Christian faith in some form or another. Welcome back to Issues Etc., coming to you live on this Wednesday afternoon, the 13th of July. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in. For the next hour, we're going to be talking about the theology of Democratic presidential candidate Hillary Clinton. We're going to be examining her life, her roots, and what has changed as well in her beliefs that deviate from her professed Christian faith. Joining us to do so, Dr. Paul Kengor. He's professor of political science at Grove City College and executive director of the college's Center for Vision and Values. And he's author of the book, God and Hillary, A Spiritual Life. Dr. Kengor, welcome to Issues Etc.
Yeah, thank you, Todd. Good to be with you.
How would you respond to someone who says, look, whatever it may be, Hillary Clinton's religious life, past and present, simply isn't relevant?
Well, she would disagree with that, right? And really, most politicians that have a faith would disagree with that. And, you know, this is something that I argue with secular liberals quite a bit. You know, it seems in their enthusiasm for separation of church and state, or at least how they understand it, they want to try to argue that your faith shouldn't influence your actions. But in fact, whether you're on the religious left or religious right, if you're a faithful person, your faith does influence your actions. And, I mean, look, everybody, the vast majority of people in American public service, they're in it, especially if you're running for office or the presidency, because you want to do good, or at least what you think is good. And your idea of good is based on a moral code. And for the vast majority of people who've ever lived, and certainly in American politics, you know, your understanding of what's good and right and your moral code comes from usually a religious philosophy, which in the vast majority of cases has been a Christian one. So in that sense, Hillary is in that way no different from a George W. Bush, a Ronald Reagan. You know, they all believe that their faith helps guide them into making moral decisions. Now, the way that they would apply it and to which issues they would apply it, that's the rub. That's always the main issue. But she would say that her faith is a part of her, and her faith influences what she does.
How would you respond to those? And this has been, you chronicle in your book, kind of a accusation made against Mrs. Clinton throughout her political life, that she is a religious.
Yeah, no, she's not a religious. She's always been pretty faithful. I mean, she is a lifelong Methodist, and in fact, she used to call herself an old-fashioned Methodist, a traditional Methodist. And I would say, Todd, and this will surprise a lot of people from the left and the right, but for a while that was true. When I did the book on her faith, that was about 10 years ago now. I used to surprise conservatives by saying, hey, did you know that Hillary supports traditional marriage? She's totally against same-sex marriage. And that always surprised them. And I would point out that she was a really solid defender of religious liberty. In fact, she and Rick Santorum, of all people, in the Senate, co-sponsored a bill protecting religious freedom in the workplace. But you know, that sort of old-fashioned traditional Methodism, that's gone out the window ever since she's come totally on board, not just for same-sex marriage, but she's really become a really kind of aggressive enthusiast for the so-called LGBTQ agenda. And so she's really pushing a lot of that stuff, even a lot of the transgender stuff that's going on now. And sadly, she's really lost a lot of her defense of religious liberty over this issue. I don't know where exactly she would stand on, you know, a baker or a florist in Oregon or Washington State or Colorado who's being fined or shut down because they won't service a same-sex ceremony, same-sex wedding ceremony. But at this point, I think she'd probably be in favor of shutting them down. And that flies completely in the face of where she was once a stalwart defender of religious liberty.
You have written similar books about George W. Bush and Ronald Reagan. How, kind of comparing the three or the book on Hillary Clinton with those, what makes her unique compared to those other two?
Well, I would say the fact that she's totally a religious left Christian, you know, a so-called social justice Christian. So Hillary Clinton is going to be invoking her faith in order to support you know, universal health coverage for all, helping the poor, helping the environment. You know, she's not going to dare mention it when it comes to an issue like abortion. In fact, her United Methodist Church, which has been pretty liberal on the abortion issue, is definitely to the right of her on abortion. She is really, I mean, she's not just pro-choice. I mean, she is fanatically pro-choice. I mean, she makes Barack Obama look like a pro-lifer by comparison. So she doesn't apply it on that issue, but she applies her faith more on issues on the left side of the spectrum. Now, George W. Bush, this will surprise a lot of listeners, but Bush was very consistent. Bush was applying his faith across the board on different issues that would surprise people, whether or not he was opposing abortion or, get this, arguing for huge, you know, very, very expensive AIDS relief programs for Africa. During which time he was commended by everybody from Bono of U2 to Christopher Hitchens when Bush was doing that. So you know, Bush is Methodist too, by the way. So Bush was always pretty, he was much more across the board. Ronald Reagan was pretty good about it too. But you were more inclined to hear Reagan cite his faith in terms of opposition to abortion. Gay marriage was not an issue at all in his time. Reagan was citing his faith a lot when it came to opposing the evil empire of the Soviet Union, because you know people should know Soviet Union was intentionally and explicitly and militantly atheistic, not a-religious or irreligious, but anti-religious. So for Reagan, his faith was a big part of that battle. So I think those are a few key differences between Hillary and Bush and Reagan.
Talk about some of her early religious influences. You discuss Reverend Don Jones, initially brief encounter with him that has lasted into her adult life. How would you describe her early religious life?
Yeah, Don Jones was fundamental. You know, Hillary at this point, Hillary when she was, I'm trying to do the math in my head, but I guess around 18 years old, however old she was in 1964, when Barry Goldwater ran for presidency on the Republican ticket, Hillary Clinton was a Goldwater girl. So she was a conservative Republican following in the footsteps of her father, who was a conservative Republican. And where all of that began to change pretty close to a 180, I guess as much as any single individual we could say had affected her, Don Jones became the youth pastor at the Park Ridge United Methodist Church in Park Ridge, Illinois, where she grew up. And he was seen as a very liberal, very left-of-center youth pastor, to the point where a lot of the traditional Methodists in the church were really concerned about him, didn't like what he was doing with the youth. And it was really, indeed, Don Jones that started pushing Hillary to the political left. So, you know, that her move to the left wasn't her father's doing, wasn't her mother's doing. There's usually, for most people in life at that point, Ronald Reagan had a pastor at that point, Ben Cleaver, his name was. But for Hillary at that point, Don Jones was the pivot point in turning her more left, not just politically, but also religiously.
When she entered Wellesley, did that trend in her faith life continue?
It did. Yeah, it very much did. And I can't say how strong her faith really was at Wellesley. Same kind of thing with George W. Bush at Yale. Bush at Yale tried to go to church. William Sloan Coffin, the radical left pastor, was the pastor there at the time, and that actually turned off George W. Bush, especially when Coffin said a really insulting thing about Bush's father, which you don't do because George Bush's father is George W. Bush's hero. But Hillary Clinton, I don't really know of much evidence of her attending religious service weekly or where she went. I think if anything, Hillary Clinton had more of a reversion back to her Methodist roots, probably late 70s, early 80s, in the Arkansas days, where, for the record, people around the country might not totally know this, but the Methodist Church is very strong in the South. So it's not a surprise that she would be able to kind of flock back to Methodism once she was in Arkansas.
Dr. Paul Kangor is our guest. We're talking about the theology of Democratic presidential candidate Hillary Clinton. He's author of the book, God and Hillary, A Spiritual Life. When we come back, we'll talk about the hallmarks of that era and her time at Wellesley, the civil rights movement and the Vietnam War. How did it shape her spirituality? Stay tuned. We talk to the biggest names in religion today, liberal bishop John Shelby Spong.
I don't think Jesus ever preached the Sermon on the Mount, for example. I don't believe anybody ever took five loaves and two fish and fed 5,000 people. I don't believe that's possible to do.
Liberal Bible critic Bart Ehrman.
There's a difference between what the historical Jesus actually said and what the Gospels say he said. And to understand what the historical Jesus was really like, we have to get behind the Gospels.
Muslim critic of Christianity Reza Aslan.
By definition, the resurrection is an ahistorical event, and so therefore historians have no right, no business commenting upon it.
Where else on Christian radio will you hear these guests challenged with important questions? Talk radio for the thinking Christian, Issues, etc. Listen live or on demand at issuesetc.org.
Listen to what you want, when you want. You're listening to Issues, etc.
The church's music from the second century.
Shepherd of tender youth, guiding in love and truth.
The sixth century. The 12th century. The 16th century. The 21st century. The best of the church's music from the past 2,000 years. LutheranPublicRadio.org.
Welcome back to Issues, Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. We're talking about the theology of Democratic presidential candidate Hillary Clinton on this Wednesday afternoon, July the 13th. Dr. Paul Kangor is our guest, author of the book, God and Hillary Clinton, A Spiritual Life. Talk a little bit about the hallmarks of that era when Mrs. Clinton was a co-ed in college there before she went to Yale and met her husband. the civil rights movement and the Vietnam War, how did they shape her spirituality?
Yeah, that was key. That made her very much the activist. She really got into those issues. She was absolutely a product of her times in that regard. She always recalled learning the song in Bible school, Jesus loves the little children, right? All the children of the world, red and yellow, black and white, they are precious in his sight. That for her was always a song, today we call it maybe a multicultural ecumenism in it, but the idea that you treat people of all races well. And so she brought that with her into her life at that point at Wellesley, got very involved in the civil rights era. And here too, people listening, maybe people left of center who don't like when certain people bring their faith into the public square. Look, Martin Luther King Jr. in the civil rights movement was all about bringing the faith into the public square. I mean, Martin Luther King Jr. was Reverend Martin Luther King Jr. I mean, that's what these guys did. And for that matter, the abolition movement in the 1800s was led by Christian pastors bringing their faith into the public square. So that was consistent with her faith. And I got to give some credit here to Don Jones. One of the things that Don Jones did in the early 60s was brought that whole youth group of kids from Park Ridge Methodist Church into Chicago and some of the other areas to see what the plight of inner city blacks was really like. Now, I think he also, I don't know to what degree Jones could be credited with this, but somewhere along the line, one of those Chicago influences ended up connecting Hillary Clinton to Saul Alinsky. And Saul Alinsky was no religious left guy at all. In fact, I don't even know what his faith was. He was Jewish. I don't think he was a religious Jew. I think he was probably agnostic. I think he was atheist. Actually, in his book, Rules for Radicals, and I'm not making this up. You could look it up. Saul Alinsky dedicates the book to Lucifer. And it says it right in the very beginning. I heard that one time on a conservative talk show, and I couldn't believe it. but I was writing the book on Hillary Clinton, so I thought I'd better check this out. I called our college library and asked them to pull the book and went over and saw it, and it said I couldn't believe it. But anyway, so at some point she gets influenced by Saul Alinsky, and that starts moving her from more of a kind of faith-based religious left experience to more of a secular radical left influence in politics. And I think what Alinsky taught her, she ended up doing her thesis on Alinsky at Wellesley, and she ended up writing with him. He even offered her a job. But that kind of influence, I think, was much more pernicious. You know, Don Jones's influence was positive religious left. Alinsky's was negative secular left.
And then enter Bill Clinton. He comes from the South. He comes from a deeply religious background. He has worn his religion on his sleeve, so to speak, throughout his entire political career. When they first meet and become involved with one another, what changes, if anything, for Hillary Clinton with regards to her faith?
Well, she didn't like going to the Baptist church that Clinton went to. It was definitely, I think, more conservative for her, and just more Baptist, more Southern Baptist. And in fact, Chelsea gets kind of caught in the tug between these two. She's not sure which of the two that she wanted to go to. And ultimately, she ended up picking the Methodist church. I don't know where Chelsea is today, religiously speaking. But so she had to navigate that choice between the two. But Hillary wasn't comfortable in the Baptist church. She has always said, Todd, quote, "I'm so comfortable," unquote, in the Methodist church. And I think probably marrying a Southern Baptist and going to some of those churches reminded her even more of her roots and how much more comfortable she was in the United Methodist Church. Now, the United Methodist Church is, of course, one of the really original American mainline denominations, so they tend to be a little more liturgical, more formal. I mean, you'll go into a Methodist church like mine here in Little Grove City, Pennsylvania, and there are stained glass windows. So a lot of that is all more Northeastern. And I think that appeals to Hillary, too, more so than the Deep South brand of Christianity that Bill was brought up in.
And the religious differences, it seems from what you write, were something that they were cognizant of and working together on, Bill and Hillary, from the very beginning of their married life.
Yeah, they were. That's exactly right. And they, in fact, on one of the hot button issues, again, abortion, I've never been able to figure out just where and how Hillary became so radicalized on this. Again, she's not just pro-choice. She's really fanatically. I mean, she's the type that will force the little sisters of the poor to pay for abortion drugs, even if they don't want to. I mean, she'll call Hobby Lobby lots and lots of names. Bill wouldn't do that. Bill was much more mildly pro-choice and was really even pro-life, even despite his wife pushing him to bring him into the pro-choice position. He went to the pro-choice position reluctantly, whereas Hillary kind of dashed to it with no problem whatsoever. But that was a difference, religious base that they both went through. I think, too, probably just the whole emphasis on Scripture and Bible and reading of the Bible. A lot of that is closer to Bill's heart than it probably is with Hillary. I mean, we remember the infamous episode of him walking into a church after the Monica Lewinsky stuff, carrying a Bible, which conservatives have made fun of. But you know, that's Bill Clinton. I mean, he could be seen often with a Bible in his hand, and I'm sure he's read the Bible. And you know, Bill Clinton was raised in the faith and always pretty strong in it.
You juxtapose in one of your chapters, while she was First Lady of Arkansas, one of her causes was, believe it or not, abstinence and sexualization of teens and children, even while her husband is evidently a philanderer from almost day one in their marriage.
Right. Yeah, I see some parallels here with Tipper Gore. People forget that Tipper Gore was Al Gore's wife. Same thing. I mean, she was all about warning labels on music and PMRC, is that what it's called? I think at the time. And you know, Al Gore ended up being much more libertine in his views on these issues, or at least after the Clinton years, anyway. Maybe not during at the time, but I mean, she was. She's always been pretty. In that sense, pretty conservative. You know, Bill has been the one who's been very wild on the sexual side and pretty much unfaithful from the very beginning. I mean, that has really been, I think, Hillary's cross to bear, as dealing with the image of being one of America's leading feminists, and at the same time, your husband is out cheating on you. I tell in the book a story. Was it maybe 1998? It might have been. Hillary was speaking at the 100th anniversary or 120th anniversary, whatever. I'd have to do the math of the founding of the women's movement in, I think, Seneca Falls, New York. And she's giving this speech, and as she's giving it to this group of women, an airplane flew over that a couple local conservative talk radio shows hosts had hired out, and it was carrying a banner saying, "Who's at home watching Bill?" Flying over top, and you know, you feel for Hillary in a moment like that, because there she is talking about feminism, and they throw that in her face. Now, on the other hand, while I'm feeling sympathy for her there, I agree with Roger Morris, who in his book Partners for Power came out, one of the first major books on the Clinton presidency. And Morris is a lot of credibility as a biographer. He's the guy that took down Nixon in the 70s. But Morris and others have made the argument, look, don't feel so bad for Hillary, because she has put up with this stuff, not necessarily stoically and as her cross to bear, but in a very cynical, shrewd way, because she sees Bill as her partner to power. So you should see Hillary in a Machiavellian way here rather than in a sympathetic way. And I think there's something to that. I think there's something to both of the arguments, actually. I feel sorry for her, the way that her husband has abused her. But at the same time, she's also led a lot of the propaganda attacks on Bill's critics. I mean, remember when in the 1990s she came out and blamed all of this on, quote, a vast right-wing conspiracy, unquote, out to get her husband. Well, it wasn't a vast right-wing conspiracy. He was chasing the interns. He was doing stuff to Monica Lewinsky so crude and so terrible, and that would make every feminist in America scream and never be able to look at the guy in the eye again or even look at him on TV. That I can't even describe the stuff that he was doing to her and that she had him doing to him, you know, while he was literally conducting the business of the state on the phone. There, I've already said too much. that's something that has both embarrassed her, but she's also put up with, I think, because she's seen him all along as part of her ticket to bigger power for herself.
Dr. Paul Kengor is our guest. We're talking about the theology of Democratic presidential candidate Hillary Clinton. We'll be right back.
Keep giving all the love you can. Stand by Hillary Man.
At Concordia University Irvine, you can pursue advanced theological study for academic, professional, or personal development. Concordia's Master of Arts in Theology program is grounded in the truth of Scripture and insights from the Lutheran Confessions. Courses are taught online and at intensive on-campus sessions in the summer. Apologetics, Christian education leadership, and Reformation studies are just a few of the emphases offered. For more information, visit cui.edu/theology.
Do you dread going to work out? Performance Fitness in Edwardsville offers a fun, supportive, tight-knit community and environment. Visit them on the web at performancefitness618.com or call 618-692-5063. Performance Fitness is the facility in the St. Louis Metro East where the focus is on member results, not membership numbers. 618-692-5063 or performancefitness618.com. Performance Fitness of Edwardsville.
A confessional liturgical Lutheran congregation in southeast Michigan in Rochester Hills. The Lutheran Church of the Incarnate Word. That's LCIW.org. We gather for the divine service every Sunday, 9:30 a.m. at Lutheran High School Northwest. The Lutheran Church of the Incarnate Word. Find us on the internet at lciw.org.
In my family, education means cultivating wisdom and virtue by teaching what is good, true, and beautiful. Memoria Press makes this type of education possible with their classical Christian curriculum. Characterized by simplicity, quality, and affordability, Memoria Press gives my children a rich classical education. Get $5 off your next order by using the coupon code LPR. For more information, go to memoriapress.com. Memoria Press, saving Western civilization one student at a time.
Talk radio for the thinking Christian. You're listening to Issues Etc.
LCMS Rural and Small Town Mission exists to support and encourage congregations in rural and small town settings. In partnership with LCMS districts, RSTM is uniquely positioned to make a major impact in revitalization support, community engagement and outreach training, congregational partnership development, and worker support through providing and developing resources geared specifically to rural and small town congregations. Check us out at lcms.org/RSTM or give us a call at our office. We're here to help.
The 500th anniversary of the Reformation approaches. A good time to ask, who are we as Confessional Lutherans? What's our heritage? The Confessional Lutherans for Christ Commission has produced the Layman's Guide to Theological History. Go to the clcc.org and see which of these presentations and books would be most helpful to you and your fellow parishioners. And consider becoming a member with us as the CLCC seeks to help more people know what it means to be a Confessional Lutheran. The clcc.org.
Thank you. Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. We're talking about the theology of Democratic presidential candidate Hillary Clinton. Dr. Paul Kengor is our guest, professor of political science at Grove City College and executive director of the college's Center for Vision and Values. And he's author of the book, God and Hillary Clinton, A Spiritual Life. Dr. Kengor, we were talking before the break about Bill Clinton's famous infidelities. And yet Hillary Clinton kind of stakes out an oddly traditional stance in that, as you say, for whatever reason, she has refused to consider divorcing him.
Right. Yeah, she has stood by her man, which is, I'm picking that phrase because she made fun of that phrase back, I think it was the original 60 Minutes interview in the 1992 campaign when she said, I'm not going to do some Tammy Wynette stand by your man thing. Well, it's really what she has done. I mean, she, now to be fair, it's hard to imagine the First Lady divorcing the president in like the middle of the second term of the president. But she was, from people I've talked to who know her, know people who know her, she was very humiliated by that. She felt very bad about it, but she's put up with it. And I mean, I can't even imagine the things that we don't know that have been made public that she's put up with from Bill. I mean, the kind of stuff that Bill has done has, you know, brought things into their marriage, I'm sure, from psychologically to, you know, again, not to be too crude, biologically, that could have affected her in very adverse ways. She's put up with a lot from a guy who was easily our most philandering president since John F. Kennedy.
Talk about a term that I heard her use quite a bit when she was First Lady. And to me, it had definite religious overtones, politics of meaning. Hearing her talk about a need for us to believe in something bigger than ourselves. What was she talking
about?
Yeah,
that was very interesting. A lot of people have completely forgotten about that. Politics of meaning, the guy who coined that term was Michael Lerner, who is a rabbi. He's the editor of Tikkun magazine. He is he's what they call a Reformed Jew, so that's you know, more liberal. The Orthodox Jews are more conservative. And he's, by the way, he himself is very much a product of the 1960s. His first marriage, he was part of the Smash Monogamy movement. And appropriately so, his first marriage ended within about a year. He's now part of the same-sex marriage movement. So he's part of the redefining of marriage movement. But he was pushing this concept in the 1990s, talking about a politics of meaning, which at that point in time seems to have appealed to maybe a sort of a New Age-ish spiritual streak that Hillary was going through, which, by the way, does not really conform with traditional Methodism at all. And she was involved in a number of those things at the time, some of them kind of creepy, some of them kind of weird, including the alleged seance at the White House. I don't know, some say that seance is way too hard of a word, where she was trying to commune with the ghost of Eleanor Roosevelt, as it was reported by Bob Woodward originally. And I do go through that in the book. But she, Michael Lerner and the politics of meaning stuff, yeah, it was a way to try to get her to fuse her faith with her politics, with ensuring that what she did policy-wise and political-wise had a deeper transcendent meaning to it, other than, you know, just real kind of nuts and bolts. Well, you cut taxes, you increase taxes. Yeah, she was looking for something quite literally of deeper meaning to what she was doing with her public life.
How does she, in that vein, kind of pausing in the narrative, how does she reconcile her traditional Methodism that still lingers in certain forms in her, obviously, and Scripture's admonitions about abortion and homosexuality, things like that, with her public views today?
Yeah, well, I think she just simply separates them. That's what it comes down to. And this is something that a lot of people on the religious left do. Nancy Pelosi, who is a lifetime Roman Catholic, and she supports redefining marriage, same-sex marriage, which her church does not. Pope Francis absolutely does not, despite, you know, beliefs, interpretations or perceptions to the contrary. But when asked about this, Pelosi has said, well, that's simple. My faith, my Jesus, is about love and tolerance, right? So thus, I will tolerate gay people, and if they want to get married, I will tolerate that. That's how they come to it. You know, they ignore the teachings of the church and of tradition and of scripture on the issue and go to some other element of it. I think Hillary does that as well. I've never heard anybody say flat out to Hillary on the abortion issue something to the effect of, look, abortion is the taking of a human life. How could you square that with, say, the commandment, thou shalt not kill? I've never heard anybody ask her just that explicitly. But rather, she believes that in supporting, you know, so-called woman's right to choose, that that's a good. And you know, that there's something good that's coming from that. She used to say, Todd, that she wanted abortion to be safe, legal, and rare. And so that was her way of kind of acknowledging, at least, that it was a necessary evil. But I've noticed lately she's dropped the rare. Now she's just simply saying safe and legal. And in a way she has to say that because she's really now demanding taxpayer funding of abortion. And I think that takes away from the rare component. I think she's advocating policies that are making it less rare. But so I don't know if that's a complete answer or not. But I got to add this. This is really important. I wrote an article on this. It came out a few weeks ago. It's up at Crisis Magazine. The United Methodist Church meets every 4 years. It's the General Assembly meeting. They meet from all over the world, and they met in Iowa in April. It's always in April. So April 2016. Last one was April 2012. And the United Methodist Church has always been pretty liberal on abortion. They've been members of the Religious Coalition for Reproductive Choice. People could Google that, Religious Coalition for Reproductive Choice, which is a member of about, well, at least about dozens of Christian and Jewish, you know, liberal Christian, liberal Jewish groups that religiously speaking believe in a woman's right to choose. Now, the United Methodist Church was actually a member of the Religious Coalition for Reproductive Choice. Hillary loved that. But in April 2016, they met and they voted to leave the Religious Coalition for Reproductive Choice. That was a really big deal. And no one has asked Hillary about that. Because now her pro-choice positions are now formally, officially, in pretty much in direct violation of where her church stands on this issue, and she ought to at least be asked about it in the way that that a Catholic politician who's pro-choice, like a Joe Biden or a Nancy Pelosi, would be asked about it.
Stepping back into the narrative, Bill and Hillary enter the White House and will stay for 8 years. And you point out that they start going to church together. What direction do they take?
Well, she became a member of Foundry Methodist Church, which is in Washington, D.C., and it was headed by Philip Wogelman. Now, it's not the only church that they went to, but for her, it was certainly the main church. I think they also occasionally attended St. John's, which is the Episcopal Church across Lafayette Park, across from the White House. A lot of presidents just simply go there. George W. Bush went there a number of times. Not that they become members of it, but they attend there. But she joined Foundry, which is the church of the Reverend Dr. Philip Wogelman. And he's known as a prominent religious left, social justice, Methodist pastor. I was actually there last summer speaking across the street, and I walked out of the building where I was, and I had one of my former students with me, and I said, "Whoa, look at that." And I pointed at that church, not knowing it was Foundry, and there was the largest rainbow flag I've ever seen in my life, draped across the front of a religious building. And I said to my student, "What church is that?" He said, "Oh, that's Foundry Methodist Church." And I said, "Oh, got it." no surprise there. But it's a very liberal church. They had Harry Blackmun there a few years ago, the author of Roe v. Wade, and they gave him a speaking platform at the church, and a number of the pro-life Methodists at the church protested that, and Philip Wogeman was really disappointed in them that they could be so intolerant as to protest this promising speaker at their church. So it's been that's Hillary would have been especially comfortable in in that particular United Methodist Church. Now, she walks into a lot of UMC churches in the South today, if she would, in the South today, including in and around Arkansas. She wouldn't feel as comfortable. But Foundry in Washington is even to the left of a left-leaning denomination as is, so she would be especially comfortable there.
Dr. Paul Kengor is our guest, author of the book God and Hillary Clinton, A Spiritual Life. We're talking about the theology of Democratic presidential candidate Hillary Clinton on this Wednesday afternoon, July the 13th. I'm Todd Wilkin. This is Issues Etc.
College Preparation Station in Maryville, Illinois offers ACT, SAT, and PSAT test prep, scholarship application classes, college and career counseling, and more. Hi, this is Lori Konski, president of College Preparation Station. We have helped our students obtain more than $7 million in tuition scholarships in 12 years. Find out more at cpsprep.com. Let us help you create a vision and find your future. The College Preparation Station in Maryville, Illinois, cpsprep.com.
Quality, quantity, qualified. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Have you been too busy to get your associate's, bachelor's, or master's degree? Concordia University, Wisconsin offers 50 online educational options. Find out more at issuesetc.org. Click the Concordia University online logo and enter the program code ISSUES to waive your application fee. Concordia University, Wisconsin is here to strengthen and support the church. Lifelong Lutheran Learning. issuesetc.org and click Concordia University, Wisconsin online.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. We're talking with Dr. Paul Kengor about the theology of Democratic presidential candidate Hillary Clinton. He's authored the book God and Hillary Clinton, A Spiritual Life. Dr. Kengor, so based on what you said before the break about at least where Hillary Clinton attended church most of the time during those 8 years in the White House, unlike so many presidents and first ladies, the church she attended while there was very reflective of her religious views.
Yeah, it was. It really was. I was talking to a New York Times reporter a few weeks ago who told me that she went to church with Donald Trump in Iowa, and, you know, not side by side with him, but she was on the campaign trail, and Trump went to a PCUSA, Presbyterian Church USA church, and PCUSA is the most liberal of the Presbyterian denominations. There's a ton of Presbyterian denominations, and so Trump grew up in PCUSA, but she told me that, I said, "How did it go?" And she said, "Well, not very well. The pastor gave a lecture on immigration." So, you know, but politically, the pastor knew, I think it was a female pastor, knew that Trump was there and gave an uncomfortable homily for him. But you know, Hillary would not have gotten that at Foundry. She would have, the pastor would have been pretty much preaching to the choir in her case. She wouldn't have been challenged from the pulpit in that church. You know, that was a safe choice for her. She wasn't going to get a finger shaken at her saying, hey, you and Bill and people in Washington, you should support this ban on partial birth abortion. She wasn't going to get that from her pastor.
Her run for New York senator and then as stepping stone, so to speak, for the presidency in 2008, how did her spiritual faith evolution continue through that?
Well, at that point, she was still, she's still religious left, social justice, but again, she kind of fell into the more traditional Methodism, certainly on the marriage issue. The one faith-based issue that continued to be raised to her repeatedly when she was in New York running for the Senate seat because of the huge gay community in New York was the marriage issue. It was really the only issue related to her faith that she was continually pressed upon many times. And she said again and again and again, I think I probably give literally at least a half dozen occasions in the book where she's being interviewed about it, and she would say things like, look, you know, I just think that historically speaking, traditionally speaking, biblically speaking, you know, that the best thing, that marriage should remain between one man and one woman. That the family should be based on that. I think that's what Scripture intended. So it was a very, and that was the view of the vast majority of the Democratic Party at the time. So that was really the only issue that came up when sort of faith-based hot button when she was running in New York.
So how do you account for kind of coming up to the present day? Your narrative leaves off about 2009, right at the time she had lost to President Barack Obama. How do you account for her continuing evolution on issues like abortion and marriage during the last 8 years?
Well, marriage is really interesting. She flipped on that, I think it was 2013, and that came really immediately with her announcing that she was running for the presidency. And so I've had a lot of people say to me, clearly this was political. Clearly her cozying up to the LGBTQ movement, the same-sex marriage movement, clearly political. And I feel like saying that and endorsing that, but at the same time, when you look at the migration of the Democratic Party and liberalism and mass to the same-sex marriage movement, I think she's probably evolved to that. So I think it's probably partly political, but also partly sincere. I think she's simply gone in that direction, as has, I guess, Bill. But I don't know what Bill. I can never trust anything Bill Clinton says. I mean, Bill Clinton is so political. It was always a nightmare for me in classes to try to teach Bill Clinton because I never knew if what he was saying was what he truly believed. Hillary, you could always be much more sure that what she is saying she truly believes. Now, on the abortion issue, I think that is really scary and frightening, and it's the thing that disturbs me the most about her, because she has just gotten so extreme on that issue. I mean, there's no moderation there at all. And so bad that she has lost her support of religious liberty, her championing of religious liberty. She gave an interview, and this obviously isn't in my book because it came later, but it was in Colorado, Aspen, Colorado, a couple of years ago. No, not even that. It was in regard to the Hobby Lobby decision of the Supreme Court, where she basically compared him to the Taliban. Look, all Hobby Lobby was saying was, and Hobby Lobby wasn't even against birth control. The people that run Hobby Lobby are evangelicals. They're not Roman Catholics. They're not against birth control. They simply didn't want Hobby Lobby simply didn't want to pay for birth control drugs that are abortifacients, the type that induce an abortion. In fact, Hobby Lobby's plan for employees already covered like 30 different contraceptives. They just didn't want to pay for a form of contraceptive, an abortifacient that induces an abortion, which really ought to be a pretty reasonable position. In other words, they simply wanted to do what they've always done, which is they never had to pay for it before, and they didn't want to be forced to do it now. Hillary Clinton just flipped out over that issue, making the worst comparisons, comparing them to Islamic regimes, misogynist Islamic regimes in the Middle East. She's just flown off the handle on this. And so I don't think that's political, because she doesn't get anything political out of that. In fact, she'd be, I think, better suited running more to the middle on the abortion issue. She is, and she has said that she is, Planned Parenthood's single best friend, as Cecile Richards has also said. She was given Planned Parenthood's highest award, the Margaret Sanger Award, in 2009. The racial eugenicist, founder of Planned Parenthood. So on that issue, I think that's very troublesome. She is you can't get further to the left than Hillary Clinton on the abortion issue.
Is she further left than mainline liberal Protestantism? Not just the United Methodist Church, which, as you mentioned before, is mitigating some of its leftward leanings lately. But take the extreme of even the Episcopal Church USA. Is she further left on those issues than even that member of the Seven Sisters, so to speak?
Well, that's a good question. The Episcopal Church is pretty, I mean, they are, if I'm correct, they're ordaining practicing gay clergy and also performing same-sex marriages. And so I don't know how Hillary feels. Okay, I know that she supports the legalization of same-sex marriage as a legal issue in the United States. I don't know how she feels about specific denominations conducting same-sex ceremonies. That's something that, again, I think she should be asked some of those questions, because I've met people on the religious left who say, okay, I support same-sex marriage as a legal issue, but I don't think the churches should ever be compelled to have to perform same-sex marriages. So, and if they don't, like, say, lose their tax-exempt status. So she could be further pushed to clarify her position on some of these things, but she hasn't really been asked to do them. And I think if she ends up debating Donald Trump, I doubt that the issue will be brought up in those formats either. By the way, I wish it would, because I'd love to hear her and Trump both asked about these issues.
Two final questions with about 30 seconds apiece. As you've looked at her religious evolution in your study of her faith life, would you say that we're still dealing with a woman, even now, political as it can be, running for president, who is driven by principle, if only social justice Christianity?
Yeah, I think probably so. Although, again, her evolution, quote unquote, on the marriage question, I still am a little suspicious of that. I think it's partly political, partly sincere evolution. But yeah, I would say she's still pretty much a social justice Christian, but I really don't know, Todd, and I was asked about this a number of times over the last few weeks. I don't know her status of where she's going to church right now and how often she's attending. I really don't know.
Finally, if one were to summarize Hillary Clinton's current spiritual life as generally typical of mainline liberal Protestantism, would that be accurate?
Yeah, I think generally to a point. Although, a liberal priest said to me recently, he said, look, I'm religious left, and I know a bunch of religious left Protestants, and most of us on the religious left are against abortion. And he said, you shouldn't have to be social justice, but also be pro-choice. So I think she's still on that issue outside of the mainstream, but maybe generally speaking, on, let's take 100 issues, she would pretty much, on 90 out of 100, align with traditional religious left social justice Protestants.
Dr. Paul Kengor is professor of political science at Grove City College and executive director of the college's Center for Vision and Values. He's author of the book, God and Hillary Clinton, A Spiritual Life. You can purchase this book at our website, issuesetc.org. Click Listen on Demand. Dr. Ken Gore, thank you very much for being our guest.
Oh, sure thing, Todd. Thanks a lot.
If you appreciate Issues Etc., your comprehensive source for news, information, and truth, please consider joining our monthly or annual giving program, the Issues Etc. Reformation Club. Now, membership benefits include T-shirts, books, broadcast transcripts, and advertising for your confessional Lutheran congregation. You can actually join by calling 618-223-8385 or click the picture of Martin Luther posting the 95 Theses at issuesetc.org, the Issues Etc. Reformation Club. Tomorrow on Issues Etc., we'll discuss the archaeological discovery of a Philistine cemetery. I wonder what that's going to be about. Dr. Andrew Steinman will be our guest, and we'll continue our series Top 3 Verses, talking with Pastor Brian Wolfmiller about the top 3 verses regarding the office of the ministry. That's relevant. That's a very relevant subject, especially since the definition of the pastor varies from someone who just kind of says he's a pastor, decides to start a church, to a vision-casting leader who considers himself next to the apostles, perhaps. What is the biblical definition of the office of this ministry? What are those passages that tell us who pastors are and what pastors do according to God? We'll answer that question with Pastor Brian Wolfmiller tomorrow on Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for listening. Talk with you tomorrow on Issues Etc.
Listen weekday afternoons to Pastor Todd Wilkin and guests on Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is vital for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our mailing address, Issues Etc., P.O. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. You can also donate at our website, issuesetc.org. Issues Etc. is a production of LPR, Lutheran Public Radio.
Temptation, promiscuity, marriage, homosexuality. These are some of the issues addressed in the Issues Etc. Book of the Month for July, Sexual Morality in a Christless World. You can read an excerpt at issuesetc.org or find out more by calling Concordia Publishing House, 1-800-325-3040. Learn the truth about sexual morality from a reasoned Christian perspective with the Issues Etc. Book of the Month, Sexual Morality in a Christless World.
St. Paul's Lutheran Church in Wildwood, Missouri is a proud sponsor of Issues Etc. And if you enjoy the relevant, Christ-centered teachings presented on this program, then you should come and join us at St. Paul's on Sundays at 9 a.m., where you will hear sermons that proclaim Jesus Christ and Him crucified for our sins, and enjoy in-depth Bible studies to help us grow as disciples. For more information, check us out at stpaullutheranwildwood.org.